Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. Welcome or welcome back, as the case may be. It is the 9 o'clock hour, our final hour together here on this Wednesday, the 17th of April. It's where we explore stuff I haven't gotten to yet and just audio on some of the stories I have gotten to. Like, for example, this. Here's a story of 2 days on the campaign trail, or same day on the campaign trail, with two guys. One of them is named Donald Trump, and his campaign trail day was spent in a courtroom.
It's called legal expense. That's what you're supposed to call it. Mr. Trump, get indicted on that. Nobody has ever seen anything like it. So thank you very much for coming. I'm now going to sit down.
And he did, of jury selection. Meanwhile, Joe Biden, free as a bird, able to get out there and campaign wherever he wishes, his administration, his Democrat Party, having successfully muzzled and shackled a primary political opponent inside a courtroom on a politically weaponized set of charges. Meanwhile, Joe Biden just out there.
As I've said, Donald Trump looks at the world differently than you and me. He wakes up in the morning in Mar-a-Lago thinking about himself, how he can help his billionaire friends gain power and control.
Thinking about himself, how he can help his billionaire friends gain power and control. Broken record for me. Political differences are fine. Here's why I think that guy's policy is bad. Or here's why I think my ideas are better than this guy. That's fine. That's what debate is about. Wakes up thinking about himself. Now, no doubt, Trump holds himself in high regard. No, there is some ego to the man. But what drives him? What makes him want to be president again? He loves this country. He sees this country in horrific decline and wants to make it better. And that drives people like Joe Biden crazy. It drives them to lie.
And force their extreme agenda on the rest of us. Listen to what he says. He says, quote, I'll be dictator on day one.
Did the speechwriter, whoever's running the country, not recognize when Trump's having a little bit of trolling fun? People said, "You, Mr. President," this was some months ago, "Mr. President, people are afraid that you're going to be a dictator." He said, "I'm only going to be a dictator on the first day." It's a joke, kids.
Quote, "I am your retribution."
Now we're talking. That is accurate. Actually, the success will be not revenge or retribution, that his success, meaning our success, will be his way of getting even with his tormentors.
He promises, quote, a bloodbath.
That was in the auto industry. If the Chinese are able to shoehorn countless cheap vehicles across the Mexican border.
If he loses, this guy denies January 6th.
What does that mean? He's well aware that it happened.
Listen to what he says, because you know he means it. I wake every morning thinking about how to make life better like you do for working in middle-class families.
Really? By robbing other people to pay off their college loans? How to make life better for people with these levels of inflation? Is your life better? Is anybody's life? Whose life is better as a result of this man as president?
Here in Scranton and all across the country, where the power and the freedom rest with you and we the people.
Well, yes, it does. The power does rest with us. The power does rest with the people. And I pray that the people have enough of their act together on November 5th to end this nightmare. Just end this nightmare. This seems like a good place to pivot to the people who are not solid, MAGA hat wearing Trump voters. And I got to tell you, I just keep coming back every once in a while to the to Stephen A. Smith. And it is sometimes the best clarity that you can get when you have people who are, listen, I can sit here and say all kinds of stuff about Trump. It'll be like, yeah, you, because you love Trump. And I can, even though I can tell you in 43 different languages that I view things objectively when it is time to view things objectively. The charges against Trump are bogus because they are bogus, not because I like him. Attempting to silence a political opponent is bad, not because the political opponent is the guy I will be voting for, but because it is bad. But I am a conservative Republican, so there's that. Stephen A. Smith is neither of those things.
To my liberal friends out there, all you're doing is showing that you're scared you can't beat them on the issues and the merits.
That's it.
That's why he keeps saying it's a political campaign against me.
That's right.
That's why he keeps saying they can't beat me at the election, at the polls. This is the only way they could do it. And if you don't put him in jail and he still goes from being a presumptive GOP nominee to the official GOP nominee and he goes to the polls, even though he was going to whine about winning and being rigged again, you have given more fodder to that argument. Which means we'll never have peace in this country.
Because we'll have, okay. How many times have I said, well, let me let Stephen A. finish, and then I'll tell you how we will have peace in this country. How we can. We can.
Tens of millions of people see what extent the other side is willing to go through just to keep him out of office because they can't beat him on their own merits.
Right.
And they're going to say, hey, you trump this up against him again, and we'll have no peace when all you got to do is figure out a way to beat him.
Well, how?
On the issues.
But they can't. They can't. Couple of things. Number one, they can't. What issue? The economy? Ha! Borders? Please. You know, gender sanity? January 6th? What? Precisely is the issue that Joe Biden can use, that Democrats can use in 2024, where they can say, man, we are knocking it out of the park on this kitchen table issue. We are doing such great guns. We're doing such a fantastic job. Oh, my gosh. We are just rocking it on this issue, this issue, this issue, this issue. This is why they run on abortion and January 6th and gender lunacy and lies, because it's all they've got. So as far as will there be peace? On the way to the election and its immediate aftermath, it could be really rough. There will be, it appears, substantial rioting in Chicago for the Democrat convention. Those are your pro-Hamas activists involved in an exponentially ramped up example of the kind of juvenile rage that you've seen as they've blocked traffic on bridges and at airports and such. This will be, they know that the eyes of the nation and the world will be on Chicago for the Democrat convention. And those folks are going to go absolutely insane. Then after, and our convention, the Republican convention is in July, and the Democrats are in August. So after they've cleaned up the streets after the riots in Chicago in August, then it's time for the September October home stretch to November 5. And that's, I'm not suggesting that we're going to have horrible unrest leading up to that. I don't know. The recipe seems set. There are a lot of people. There are a lot of people out there saying they flat out just factually expect some type of rioting, like no matter how the election goes. I'm not going to go there. But with the left in particular, and I know Marco, wasn't it Trump supporters that went nuts on January 6th? Yes, it was. It was some sliver of a percent of a really big crowd, so that still gave you plenty of rioters, no doubt about that. But if Trump wins, these people, these folks of the violent left, bets are off, man. Bets are off. And then as you get to the Trump inauguration and the impeachment proceedings that will begin, they may begin before the inauguration even happens. Oh, they will come after him. So as Stephen A. says, you know, we can't have peace. We can. We can. The path to peace goes like this. And we'll see if we can carve this out. Trump wins a victory for normalcy. People who know how many genders there are. People who know that we need a border. People who know that crime should be punished. People who know that we need pro-business and pro-family tax policy. People who know all kinds of things that this administration does not know. So a sense of relief will sweep over the land. The battle against him will ramp up because some people are not going to take losing well. And any of that that involves lawbreaking needs to be shut down. There need to be mass arrests, the mass tamping down of any unrest, which we don't tend to do when liberals do it. You know, post George Floyd, those riots, those are great. Those are some great riots, man. Mostly peaceful, right? So that we may see a revisit of that after the Trump victory. You know, might want to make plans November 6, 7, 8, because there might be streets might be on fire. You never know. That's how crazy these people are. That's how crazy things can get. And so in general, though, what do I always say about peace in terms of actual war, like global war? Peace is not just the cessation of hostilities. Peace is what you get when the good guys win. If the good guys win on November 5th, the good guys being those who believe that crime should be punished, who believe that we need borders, who believe that there are two genders, who believe that we need non-confiscatory tax policies, who believe that we need to have a strong America presenting its face across the world. And by the way, not in terms of entanglement in countless foreign wars and being the world's policeman, simply a show of strength where the world's tyrants and terrorists look at the American president and go, I have no idea what that guy might do. If you have that going for you, America is safer and the world is safer. So once we have that, that's called a good guy victory. Then the folks that can't handle the fact that the good guys won need to be shown in no uncertain terms that they may protest and they may complain and they may wail and they may lament. But no lawbreaking, no rioting, no. And once they are delivered that message, if they are delivered that message clearly, then we can have peace. Then we can get to an America where where all the Democrats do, all the left does is complain about Trump's policies. Which will be fine. What a glorious day that will be when all the Democrats are doing is saying, wow, we don't like those lower taxes. Wow, we really hate that the border exists. Wow, we really hate that that we're trying not to allow parents and doctors to carve up children for transgender lunacy. Oh, we really hate that. Those are bad policies. Come on, bring it. We'll debate those all day long. We'll debate those for 4 years. 921. All right, it's almost unfair. We were just in light of the Duncanville dog tragedy where three dogs killed a one-year-old and a German Shepherd mix, but that will invariably get us into the world of pit bulls. This is almost unfair. I say that with a smile. On the Viaskin of Las Colinas text line, Mark, here's a gentleman from Michigan. Mark, I'm a 100% disabled veteran of the Marine Corps with mobility issues. The VA issued me a letter to have a mobility assist service dog. I chose America's dog. Let me introduce you to our Bruno. Great, he even names his dog the same name as our terrier, who assists me with my disabilities. Love you, Mark. And there's a picture of Bruno. total pit playing with a ball. How can you cast aspersions on that? I shan't, and that, I guess, is the value of take everybody on a case-by-case basis, which, by the way, is not why I'm going to make anybody come get your pit bull if you bring a baby into the house, and why breed bans are a bad idea. They overgeneralize. All right, well, I don't want to overgeneralize about something, but... So let me approach this with what I think is just the right focus. I've told you for a long time, they are coming for your death penalty. They are coming for, let's call it our death penalty. You can find cases where somebody was on death row and got let off because, wow, we found evidence that this person was not guilty. So that's good. Is there evidence of ever having executed an innocent person? I'm going to go with no. Doesn't mean we haven't done it. It's a human system. And this is what leads me to think that maybe the death penalty ought to be beyond the shadow of a doubt and not just reasonable doubt. Because this is how you get cases like Melissa Lucio, as you will recall, where now, in a rare joint statement, the DA and the defense agreed that prosecutors withheld evidence that could have pointed out the innocence of Melissa Lucio down in the Rio Grande Valley some years ago. And this was a case that was the source of a lot of activism to get her off of death row, which they did with a new trial awaiting, which should happen because she just flat out got railroaded. Does that make the death penalty a bad idea? Of course it doesn't. This is a textbook case of mend it, don't end it. Maybe mending it involves a changing of the standard for proof. You know, with O.J. having died, I told you, listen, I'm really comfortable concluding O.J.'s a murderer. Am I, like, there's video of it certain? No. Would I have, does that make O.J. probably a perfect example of life in prison rather than the death penalty? Sure. Sure. But they are coming for your death penalty, and sometimes and some of the people who are coming for the death penalty offer themselves up as conservatives. Have you ever heard of a group called Texas Conservatives Concerned about the Death Penalty? Oh, they're concerned. They're just asking questions, you could say. Well, they're concerned, all right. They want to get rid of it. I found an op-ed from these people, and I'll offer it to you because you just got to be careful. They are coming for our death penalty. 9:31, into the newsroom we go. Here's... There is one guy playing every instrument you hear on this little instrumental ditty. The guy is Paul McCartney. It's from his first solo album, 1970. He's up in the barn in Scotland, doing the bass, the guitar, the drums, the whole shebang. I think Linda did a couple of things in there. That's the album, of course, has Maybe I'm Amazed and stuff. But that is Mama Miss America. Alrighty, 866-660-5759. Let's hop right to this. I don't know exactly what contributes to, leads to this kind of moral illiteracy. Because here's the deal. If somebody's against the death penalty, be against the death penalty. If you just are not comfortable with government putting people to death, you know, for crimes they've committed, then say so. Tell me so. Do not tell me it's conservative. Do not tell me, do not try to tell me that it's pro-life. What? Meet Texas conservatives concerned about the death penalty. They don't want to tell you they're flat out against the death penalty, even though they are. They're just concerned. Can't we just be concerned? There's a recent Dallas Morning News op-ed by a woman named Nan Tolson. I've heard her name. I think she used to do communications for the governor or something like that. Anyway, at some point, Nan decided she does not like the death penalty and wants to gaslight people into thinking that it is somehow conservative to oppose the death penalty, or, more perversely, somehow pro-life. Pro-life also means anti-death penalty. The headline reads, the subhead, if, boy, just let this one sink in. If unborn life is sacred, all life should be sacred. Really? If unborn life is sacred, all life should be sacred. All life being sacred is the height of moral idiocy. Were the lives of the German soldiers sacred as we took the beaches of Normandy on D-Day? Ooh, can't kill them. After all life is sacred. If you hear a rustling in your child's bedroom, and you hear maybe a glass break, and you fear that there's an intruder afoot, so you grab your gun, and you tiptoe into your child's room and see someone hovering above your child with a knife. Is that intruder's life sacred? Oh, can't do anything. Can't kill him. His life is sacred. Innocent life is sacred. Four words. Repeat after me. Innocent life is sacred. Meaning self-defense, defend somebody else, defend a loved one against a deadly threat. A just war, the notion that all life is sacred is rank moral idiocy. It is because innocent life is sacred that we will take yours if you are a murderer. Ms. Tolson writes as follows. This month, thousands of pro-life Texans will come together to recognize the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. We'll march in communities across the state as a symbol of our collective resolve to foster a culture of life in Texas. As a conservative who opposes abortion, I'm grateful for the strides we've made to protect the lives of the unborn here in the Lone Star State. But for me, as well as a growing number of other conservatives, the meaning of pro-life reaches far beyond the lives of innocent babies. Let's stop. If indeed you fancy yourself a conservative and you find yourself tacking away from the death penalty, you are losing your conservatism on that issue. She continues, if Texans are truly dedicated to protecting life, then we must fight to uphold the sanctity of all life. I think I've made clear why that's stupid. That means we must renounce the horrific state-sanctioned system that goes against our values, the death penalty. To be pro-life means to respect the dignity and inherent worth of every person. I'll take that. Are there things that can happen where someone's dignity and inherent worth take a bit of a tumble? Yeah. That person being a murderer would be just such a thing. As Americans, we recognize life as an unalienable right upon which our very nation was founded. And for pro-life people of faith, here comes faith. This just in, the death penalty is scriptural. Repeat, the death penalty is scriptural. What about thou shalt not kill? Thou shalt not murder. You think Jesus disapproves of you putting a bullet in that guy that's about to kidnap your kid? You think Jesus disapproved of us killing some Germans on the way to toppling Hitler? Please, don't be a dummy. If we are truly committed to protecting the sanctity of life, we must uphold these values unconditionally for the totality of life. From the innocent child in the womb to the person on death row convicted of a heinous crime. Good Lord. Nan. You don't want to do this. But she does. Much like abortion, the death penalty falsely teaches us that some life is unworthy, without purpose, unwanted, or simply irredeemable. As champions of life, we can't support a system that perpetuates the lies we have fought so hard against. Again, if you want to be against the death penalty, go be against the death penalty. The death penalty teaches us that some life is unworthy. Every life is worthy. Every life has purpose. Some people are indeed redeemable. But if you have killed, if you are on death row, it is because you deserve to be there. And the very scriptural, symmetrical death penalty is there to address it. Now she gets to the things that, to her argument's credit, should give pause to those of us who are avid death penalty proponents. 16 innocent people have been removed from Texas death row. There's compelling evidence our state has wrongly executed at least, there's not. Five, according to the Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. I'm sure they're objective about it. Nationwide, nearly 200 people have been exonerated after spending time on death row for crimes they did not commit, according to the Death Penalty Information Center. Now, the Death Penalty Information Center is reliable, and every time we find somebody on death row and let them out because we found evidence that they didn't do it, I am thrilled. I don't ever want to execute an innocent person. These death penalty opponents don't want to execute anybody. Ms. Tolson writes, from the appeals process to executions, the death penalty system traumatizes and re-traumatizes those involved, including victims, loved ones, chaplains and spiritual advisors, and the corrections officers who administer lethal injections. Executions create more grieving families, perpetuating a cycle of violence and the loss of life. What a steaming load that paragraph is. You know what the thing is? Oh, and by the way, don't want to pull rank on anybody. The defining moment in my life on this was witnessing an execution in the state of Florida in July of 1984. I was news director of the station where I'd worked. I'd been doing talk shows for 2 years. I was a baby. And my name came around on the media witness rotation. So I drove out from Jacksonville to Stark, one of the best names ever for the location of a prison. And Florida State Prison saw David Lee Washington executed for brutally murdering three people in Miami 5 years earlier. 5 years on the fast track. I spoke with the families of his victims afterward, and they spoke of their relief. They spoke of their satisfaction at justice having been done. If there's anything that chaps victims' families, it's that it takes forever to execute people. Year upon year upon year of useless, meaningless appeals. There should be an appeals process, obviously. I'd like to be really sure when we execute people. In fact, I am the guy sitting here telling you that maybe if there's a basis for appeal and a whole lot of I's undotted and T's uncrossed, then maybe that's not a death penalty case. Maybe that's somebody who we have in there for life in prison without hope of parole, unless we find evidence that you didn't do it. Then we let you out. Can't let somebody out after they've been executed. That is undeniably true. But this notion that just having the death penalty is some enormous emotional albatross around corrections officers, not at all. Victims' families, not at all. They tend to like it when executions happen. As far as chaplains and spiritual advisors, kind of depends on where they're coming from. If you have a chaplain or a spiritual advisor who's actually biblically based, then they will recognize that God and Jesus approve of the death penalty, and they won't be real twisted up about it. Executions create more grieving families. I am sure that it's a tough day for the family when a son or a dad or Carla Faye Tucker, a mom or a daughter, is put to death. I'm sure that's a tough one. But it is just, it is proper, it is right. Ms. Tolson, director of Texas Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty, continues, opposition to the death penalty doesn't mean we disregard community safety, doesn't mean we withhold punishment for heinous crimes. I know that. So as we rally together and celebrate life this month, I will join my fellow pro-life Texans to advocate for the unborn, support Texas mothers, and champion laws that will end the atrocities of abortion. But I call upon these same Texans to join me in extending our pro-life values to every Texan, born and unborn, innocent and guilty. Join me in respecting and upholding the sanctity of life, all life, even when it's not easy. All life matters from the womb to the tomb. No better community to champion this than the pro-life community. Ms. Tolson, totally entitled to your view. Glad to share it. And this is in her Dallas Morning News op-ed, pro-life means anti-death penalty. But this is not a pro-life argument. The pro-life argument is about the innocent life of the unborn. Biblical morality identifies innocent life as sacred, not all life. Go to war against the United States, your life is no longer sacred. Try to kill my kid, your life is no longer sacred. I mean, in my house. Kill somebody in America? It is because innocent life is sacred that we take yours if you are a murderer. So there's anti-death penalty people. There's pro-death penalty people. That debate is fine. Let it happen on its merits. Do not for one millisecond allow someone to gaslight you into believing that death penalty, that you must somehow embrace death penalty opposition to be conservative or to be pro-life, because it is neither. It's 9:50. Figured we'd double down on some Liz Phair today on her 57th birthday. 1998, great album, White Chocolate Space Egg. I have no idea what she's talking about. This is Polyester Bride. Jimmy Kersey filled in for Rhonda today. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. Thank you, Nikki Whaley, for news excellence. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Mike Gallagher is next. A parting thought. Whoever has Joe Biden's Twitter account phone said, hey, women ought to be paid what they deserve. Women have done amazing things in sports, pushing new boundaries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's lovely. Maybe people who want men to be competing in women's sports don't need to be talking about the challenges of women's sports. Just saying. All right, everybody, see you tomorrow for the Thursday morning program. Who knows what delights will await us? Follow me on Twitter, X, at Mark Davis, Mark Davis Show on Facebook. And again, Mike Gallagher is next. See you in the morning, 7 to 10, right here on 660 AM The Answer. Be good.